Hey, I'm David Morrissey from The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Underground.
Now your hosts, Cynic, Igri, and Ryan.
And you are listening to the Walking Dead Underground podcast, and I'm your host, Cynic. And joining me, as always, my co-hosts, and now the backup dancers for Justin Bieber on Broadway, the musical, Igri and Ryan. On this week's show, we do a full breakdown of The Big Scary You. And spoiler alert, the title has nothing to do with how full you're going to feel after that food you eat over the holidays. So sit back, turn up the volume, pass the cranberry sauce, like, listen, subscribe. Most importantly, enjoy the show. We open the episode with a flashback. Father Gabriel is praying for purpose. Last we saw Alexandria's good father, he and Negan were stuck in a sticky situation, trapped together in a trailer, surrounded by walkers. IG, if you're Father Gabriel, do you have your shitting pants on? I mean, for as charismatic as Negan is, he is still a bat-wielding sociopath. Might it be a little less dangerous outside?
It might very well be less dangerous outside. At least you know what you're into. That's the thing with Negan is, you know, he flips all the time. He could be telling you one minute, you know, hey, everything's fine. We're going to have a good time. And the next minute, he's beating you over the head with a bat. I think he's got his shitting pants on. Father Gabriel, having seen how he acted in previous seasons and episodes, I think he's in a permanent state of shitting pants. I think he's got stock options in Depends underwear.
I think at this point, I would rather be trapped in the old factory with Mr. White from Reservoir Dogs with him listening to a little bit of Stuck in the Middle with You dancing around with a razor blade. I'd much rather have my ear chopped off than be loose-sealed in a sea of walkers. Ryan, we haven't seen the leader of the Saviors or his creepy as shit sidekick for at least three episodes. Right now, we have at least five fractured storylines. I mean, does this help or hurt the show? Do you feel that The Walking Dead works best when the band's all together?
I think in theory, it shouldn't hurt the show because we see this on other TV shows. We saw it Game of Thrones, obviously. The Wire was another show that was able to balance a lot of storylines. I think the problem with The Walking Dead is more to do with the pacing and how they address, you know, the storylines. And I think this is a good example. And I think this is a very good episode. So I like the episode. But as a critique more of the season, it's kind of disjointed because we saw him, you know, for the first episode, then every week I'm like, okay, what's going to happen with Negan and Gabriel? And you get nothing and you get nothing and you get, and then 3-4 weeks later you get that. So I think it's more a problem of the show being, you know, of them just not, of the editing or not pacing it properly than it is, you know, in theory, it should be able to work. You should be able to balance that many storylines without much of an issue.
Yeah, I think it's more having to fill for time. You know, that they took these storylines and elongated them to the point where I think that for the writing for the whole season, they just couldn't cover enough time to tell an intriguing story. So they tried to stretch smaller parts of it because last week could have been done in 5 minutes. They took an hour. Now, that doesn't mean last week up until this episode was probably my favorite episode of the season, but it's still something that could have taken 5 minutes. It didn't need to take an hour. And the same thing with the episode before that and before that. I think they just don't have enough story to drive this season what they want to accomplish.
Well, I don't think they want to blow their wad in like 2 or 3 episodes. I mean, and that's what people are expecting. They want instant gratification. They want it right now. I mean, everybody has been Netflixized where they want the whole season released in a week and to be able to go through it in 2 days and go, oh, it takes too long between seasons.
No, I'd push back on that a little bit because I think we know going into the season that they're going to be, this is a storyline that would potentially be stretched thin because, you know, really comes down to, you know, the all out war and what, and the final battle between the Saviors and the kind of combined, you know, Hilltop Kingdom, Alexandria, you know, but I think the story could be done well. It's like, we don't need, like, I kind of came into the season fully aware that, you know, it's not, we're not going to get the resolution now, but I think that the issue is more with how they're telling the story and the choices that they make more than it is like us getting our resolution. Cause I don't think anyone expects this to be resolved. None of us want this to be resolved, by mid season or by, you know, hopefully by the end of the season. But I think it's that the way that they take their time and the decisions they make with the editing, I think that's really more problematic than it is like our desire to like get the ending right now.
What would be your one thing, Ryan, that you would change?
I think it comes down to the editing and how they, you know, just the process that they're choosing to allow the story to unfold, because they just feel like it's disjointed. And we're, you know, we haven't gone to Alexandria this season at all, right? Like outside of the very beginning. So it's more, you know, how they're, the choices they're making and how they're telling the story. I think that's more problematic for me than anything else, that you could have such a big kind of cliffhanger of Negan and Gabriel in the same room together, surrounded by a horde of zombies, and not approach it for 3 weeks. It just doesn't make sense, you know? And so I think that's it for me. I think it really comes down to editing. Cause if you look at this as a whole, I think the story is being told well, and I'm sure that if somebody kind of took all the footage we have right now and edited it, you could come up with, you know, 5 solid episodes that kind of make sense in the greater scheme of things.
I don't know about 5. I think maybe 3.
Fair enough. You're right. I would say if you want to stick to the 5 episodes we have, but you're totally right. You could take what we have now and edit that then into 3 awesome episodes versus 5 that kind of seem a little bit with a good deal of filler mixed in.
Well, my problem is that the cast is so big that if you take this thing that's really great and really fun and you keep splitting it, eventually you're going to get to the point where it's mediocre and you end up with a Sasha Rosita storyline that absolutely nobody cared about going forward. But I do, this leads to my next and my follow-up question. Do you think the absence was a direct result from the complaints of Negan saturation from last season?
I think it absolutely was. And I think they don't really realize what they're missing until it's gone. Cause you know, I saw some complaints on different boards about The Walking Dead in the last few episodes that it just wasn't happening anything. And we saw Negan, and now Negan's not been around. We've heard mention of Negan, but nobody's seen him. Have they been pushing forward in time? Are they still in this same 20 minutes? What's going on? Cause I mean, it all seems to like rehash the same time frame, and it's confusing. And it's problematic. And truth be told, you see this happen here. This show just took off this week, and it's squarely because of Negan. It's his charisma. It's the writing that they do for him. It's how he's able to speak in the show. It just adds another element. And the thing is we've lost that because Rick doesn't talk as much as bite people or fight anymore. So he's not as strong a talker. Daryl has never been really much of a talker. He just shows up, looks cool, and shoots shit with a crossbow. You need somebody strong. And the thing is it's always kind of been a bad guy, because even the governor was a good speaker. The guys at Terminus were good speakers. You need people that are engaging. And we haven't had anybody really engaging, with the exception of King Ezekiel and Jerry, in the last few episodes. And King Ezekiel last week was a little bit on the weak side because he was injured, and that was his story. It worked for last week, but it's just, we need more. And Negan brings that. So yeah, I think that it's directly seen that happened, because one of the other things that happened is Negan literally didn't do anything that would be considered quote unquote bad this week. He didn't hurt anybody. He barely threatened anybody. He only punched Gabriel in the nose once for making him talk about his dead wife. I mean, come on. It's not that Negan is a bad guy. Negan is doing what Negan has to do. And I love it. I love it when he's there.
Ryan, we have The Wire, and we saw quite a bit about that. We have Game of Thrones. But normally the formula in TV shows is that you don't normally see things from the bad guy's perspective, the villain, the antagonist. You don't normally see them from their perspective. But The Walking Dead has given us quite a few background episodes from the Sanctuary perspective. Do you think this is a long-term mindset that maybe this group might be around for a while?
I don't know. I would hope so. I'd like to see some kind of development in one way or another with different characters. I think it's a smart move, because it gives you more insight into the villain and their backstory, and allows you to kind of feel for them. That's part of the, you know, what's been the issue with like the Marvel and the DC, some of the DC movies lately, is that the biggest knock on the Marvel movies is that the villains are kind of one note. You know, they're just kind of mustache twirling one note. You don't, there's no pathos, there's no history, there's no reason. They're not human. They're just evil, and it's easy to root against them. And that's one of the, you know, when you look at a good villain, somebody who has layers and something that you can, you know, you can understand it, good or bad. You can understand why they're doing what they're doing. And so I think it makes sense to do that with Negan. We've seen it before with other characters. And I think it makes for a compelling villain, and it allows you to see things from their perspective and you know, either empathize or sympathize with them a little bit, or hate them even more. But I think it's an important way to make develop a strong, long lasting character that's missing often from TV. And I think I was going to go back to what Ig was talking about, you know, the dislike or the kind of being Negan'd out last year. And I think a lot of that had to do with he was like the cool heel, right? Like from pro, to use like kind of a pro wrestling term, he was like, he was really cool. He was quippy. He was really fun. He was charismatic. But the problem was that that was kind of all he was. Like, we knew that he was like the cool villain. And then, yeah, he could be really vicious when he needed to be, but we got nothing beyond that last season. And I think getting this is what we needed. Some of that kind of character development is what we need if we're going to deal with, you know, kind of the quippy, fun, cool version of Negan.
Well, I think they had to even him out. I mean, when they introduced him, he bashed two lovable characters to death. So I think they needed to make him the cool guy, or it was just going to be, you know, another straight out of the box villain. I'm, you know, they had to Stone Cold Steve Austin him up a little bit so he would be more palatable, and he's just not a guy bashing people to death with a bat, right?
But even when he bashed their heads in, he was still cool, right? Like, he was still really charismatic. So you get that part of him. But granted, like, he was bad enough that we needed. But that's the thing is, if we would have gotten some of these character moments last season, you know, then you kind of do feel for him. And you know what? His logic kind of makes sense. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I know we haven't gotten quite to that yet, but like, you know, if you really understand what he's saying, it makes sense in this world, good or bad. It's he's not wrong.
IG, wiki wiki, eggs and pancakey, Gregory. No thank you. No yay. We jump to another flashback of Simon working Gregory, pre-kicking him down the stairs. Some people refer to Simon as Negan Light. Given a chance to lead, do you think Simon can manage the masses like he does Gregory? And could the Saviors maintain their lifestyle with Simon in charge?
No, I don't think so. While he's very charismatic, Simon is amazingly charismatic. He's got a wonderful smile and he's got that creep factor. He doesn't have the authority. He just does not project the kind of authority that Negan projects. And I honestly don't think that he has the plan, right? I think Negan has these quote unquote lieutenants that he has doing things, but I don't think any of them have a complete plan. I think Negan keeps that all to himself. Now, he might develop that plan, different parts with different people, but it's still only Negan's plan and they're going to do it Negan's way. And so far, it's worked as long as Negan is around.
We learned a few things in the big meeting between Gregory and Negan, such as the big scary you is for unknown. Ryan, more importantly, are we seeing the defined difference between a leader like Negan and a boss like Gregory? I mean, has Gregory's bullshit train finally derailed?
I think his bullshit train derailed a long time ago. You know, I mean, I think it's just different leadership styles. And in this world, Negan's is going to be the more effective style. So, I think Gregory's in over his head and he's been in over his head. It's not that his style of leadership is ineffective, but I think he's ineffective at wielding it. And when you come across somebody like Negan, he's just a dominant kind of character, the alpha male. And so I think, you know, it's a little bit more that Gregory's just a weaker character and a weaker person. And, you know, he's in way over his head, you know, face to face or toe to toe with Negan.
Well, that's it. I mean, we all know Gregory. We all know Negan in real life. I mean, we've all encountered that middle management guy that doesn't speak from experience, that was probably promoted because he was related to somebody, that has no working knowledge of what we're up against. Up until a few episodes ago, he never even killed a walker. The same person that just kind of, we have Maggie, just she kind of waltzed in and took over his whole shit without even any kind of effort because she's a leader. Gregory's a boss.
He's not even a good boss. And that's the thing. It's not like he doesn't empower his people or recognize the good managers that he has. I mean, because, you know, he could have empowered Maggie and Jesus and all the other people at the Hilltop in little groups to make them more effective and been a boss and made things fine. But instead, he wanted to fight everything, even when things and other people are right. He wanted to fight all of it. And that's, you know, I mean, we've all had that boss in our life, too, where everything they do is wrong and somehow it's never his fault, or at least in his mind. And that's the thing with Gregory is Gregory just, and don't get me wrong, it's played magnificently. And this is a role. he's doing an amazing job with it, because it's so hard to play this inept week after week after week. And he's doing it flawlessly. And I know that's, and people look at that like it's that guy. That guy's done amazing things in film and TV. He's great. But this character is just, he's the spineless leader. He's the spineless CEO who blames everything on the vice presidents or the managers or whatever. He's awful. And it could have been fixed just so simply just by empowering the people that you have in charge. Because that's what a good boss does. You realize what your leadership team is and let them do their job. And he wants to stick his fingers in all of that.
Oh, yeah. His T-shirt is all the praise and none of the blame, you know. Once again, The Walking Dead did a magnificent job framing the moment, the kind of stare down between Gregory and Negan with music. I mean, if you go back and listen to it, it just upped the tension another level. And Negan hits him with, you know what, Gregory? I think you're playing both sides. I think you're a thin dick politician threading the needle with your thin, thin dick. IG, people are a resource. They're the foundation of what we built here. Did you pee your pants just a little bit every time that bat slammed against the table? I mean, how great was the acting between Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Xander Berkeley?
Oh, yeah. The pucker factor definitely went up when that was going on. You just, your butthole is going to tighten up when he starts doing that stuff. It's like they don't know who they're talking to at times. It's that they know who they're talking with and who they're talking around. When you know that people are a resource and that he wants things run a certain way and you try and waste resources or come up with other fucking plans. And why don't they get yet that that's not something that you get to do, especially with Negan around?
Yeah, there are no call and audibles at the line, Ryan, when Negan calls the play. When he radios it in to the to Simon or Gavin or Regina, there is no call and audible. I mean, have you ever been dressed down by a boss like that? And how bad would it have been if he's slamming a bat with barbed wire wrapped around it against the table? I mean, is it maybe time to get the New York Times out and maybe look for a new job?
Yeah, that was pretty. And that's also kind of how, you know, part of, you know, I was trying to think, I can't even think of a good example personally, but like, you know, the situation where somebody is, you're too cool with somebody, or someone's too cool with you, or they, you know, or you've given them a little bit as far as your time and energy, and they think they expect more, or they try to act a way that maybe they, you know, they go a little too, they cross the line as far as like how they should be act, whether it's like joking around with you or playing a prank or saying something. It kind of feels like that, where Negan is a little bit ahead of everybody as far as like what the expectations are. And so, you know, he's obviously much more nuanced in his thoughts. And I think that everyone else is just a few steps behind. And then you see the anger, and that's got to be, you know, because he's always joking. And so even when he's beating people's brains out, you know, even when he's being attacked by a freaking tiger, he's still quipping. So to see him actually get angry had to be even more terrifying for everybody at that table, because he's liable to just, you know, just kill everyone and start over. You just don't know. He seemed almost unhinged, but still in control of himself. So I thought it was a really great scene, and you know, even more so because of just the way that he was able to shift from Negan to menacing and quiet to angry screaming back to, like, you know, quipping. It was really brilliant, that scene.
Yeah, even when I was in the military, though, I didn't have anybody dress me down like that. That would be terrifying. Well, first of all, the only reason I would let anybody dress me down like that would be because of that fucking bat. That bat kind of sells it all. It's like, yeah, you can talk to me whatever way you want. You have the bat. Without the bat, though, it'd be like, well, I'm just going to leave. You can, when you're ready to talk normally, we can come back to this. So there aren't many managers in the world that can get away with talking to an employee on any level. It's, I mean, even in the military, which I would think would be a more extreme example, that viciously. Like, you can be vicious, but that was very vicious. And yeah, like I said, pucker factor went way up there. You pee a little bit, even if you're not in the room. Like, I'm sitting on my couch. Oh, I have to go change my drawers.
It seemed like they took a very different tactic of storytelling. In the beginning of this episode, they answered a lot of the questions we had from last week, like what the plan was for the leadership of the coalition, why the Saviors didn't exactly whip out the big guns and fight back when Rick and company showed up. I mean, they kind of went behind the scenes. Did you enjoy this more like behind the scene, behind the music approach that they did. It was almost like an extended preview, like previously on The Walking Dead. I mean, sometimes shows like The Affair on Showtime did this. They tell the same story, but from a different character's perspective.
Yeah, no, I thought it was great. Seeing kind of the inner workings of the Saviors, because we've generally when we've seen it from the perspective of somebody that's their hostage. So you know, we saw it from Eugene's perspective, we saw it from Daryl's perspective, or from Carl, but we've never seen it really from their perspective and how they see things, and not kind of clouded or colored by somebody else's experience. So I think it was really cool to get that. And again, it kind of goes back to painting Negan as more than just kind of a mustache twirling quippy villain, that we actually see that there's something to what they're doing and to their system and their society. And then it makes you think twice about, you know, who's right in this whole situation, or is nobody right? Or, you know, and so I liked it. And that was one of the good things. The thing I liked about the episode is that it was different, and that we really got a different perspective, kind of philosophically, that makes it a bit of a difference as far as like who you're going to root for in the war to come.
We finally cut back to present timeline, and Negan and Father Gabriel are stuck in the middle with you, trading insults, trading blame. Gabriel comes clean about not wanting to die a fruitless death, and Negan outright mocks him for saving that bearded prick Gregory. Finally, Gabe says, "Maybe I'm here to take your confession," and then just gives him that big creepy grin. Even though it didn't exactly happen like this in the comic books, Ig, did that whole scene feel like it was straight off the pages? I mean, was that Kirkman in one scene?
It absolutely was. It was really, really well done. I really enjoyed it. And it kind of, that smile out of Gabriel gave me a little bit of a shudder down my spine, which was kind of like, oh man, are you really trying to do this with Negan right now? But it was, when they play that close to the source material, and I know they don't do it all the time, and they can't do it all the time, it just wouldn't give us the show that we have. And I think it would play weaker on the screen if they went straight from the book onto the screen. But sometimes when they do it, it is just amazing. And this was pure Kirkman, and it was amazing. I loved every second of it.
The only thing, Ryan, that Negan's willing to confess is that if his people think he's dead, a whole lot of other people inside are going to die. And why? Because he's not going to be there to stop it. Do you think Sanctuary is the precarious apple cart that it is by design? I mean, is the peace just fragile enough? Is the secondary leadership just competent enough? Is this all by design that it won't function without him?
I don't think it's by design, but I think that I think that he realizes that that's just the way it is, that it's a situation. He even talks about, you know, how easily, you know, how he was able to kind of take over. And so I think he realizes that it is incredibly fragile, and that there are too many heads. If he's gone, there are too many people vying to be the head. And then you have the workers and limited resources and being surrounded by zombies. And I think he just realized, he knows that it's not going to work, and that he's needed. He's like a god to them, you know, at this stage. So with their god, they will do whatever he says. They will follow him. But without him, there's just too many other people pulling in different directions. And just, there are too many variables that are leading to disaster. So I don't know that. I don't think he designed it this way, but he, as an opportunist, kind of took advantage of a situation that lends itself to that.
Are you surprised, Ryan, at the depth of the Savior's forces? I mean, they have three well-stocked outposts. They have defenses at all of them. They have lookouts on certain roads. I mean, their battle plan is pretty sound for it. You know, you have to give Negan a little bit of credit for that, right?
Absolutely. I think he gets a lot of credit. You know, I don't, you know, it'd be interesting to see what exactly the situation was prior to his arrival, but he's the type of person that, you know, people will rally behind, you know, whether, you know, it's out of fear or necessity, they've obviously rallied behind him. And so once you do that, if you, you know, I guess it's scaled up, you know, enough for him to really build an organized system. And I think it's a society that's in such chaos that by, you know, I feel like it's maybe one of the things that kind of snowballs for him, and you know, he's able to take more people in, take more groups in, get more workers, build a greater stronghold. And so obviously, like, he's a, you know, one in, you know, kind of one of a kind person to do that in this, in the climate that they're in. But, you know, it's impressive nonetheless.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the way he goes about things, though, what it looks like, and it's maybe partially by design, but I think, you know, it just happens to be that everything works when he's there, because the way he leads is he sees where the need is. He fills the need, sees where another need is, fills that need. He used Eugene, who he saw made one bullet, and it took him a while to make one. But he realized that the guy had some form of intelligence that would work on some things and put him in a spot. And that's what Negan does. And what the result is a more comfortable quality of life for most of the people there than what they had before they came to the sanctuary. So what they see is that Negan may be rough. He may punish people in front of everybody and throw you into a fire, but you get to eat today. We have air conditioning, running water. It's a pretty good trade-off as long as you're willing to follow the rules. And I think that they didn't have all those things when Negan came in power. So that's where it all kind of balances out. And I think, and when the power goes off later and the air conditioning goes away and they're all like freaking out, you know, that's proof that they think Negan is the reason all this works.
No one won. The only one left are me, the king, the Axeman, and the psychotic lady with the short hair. IG, Rick and Daryl find out about the destruction of the last battle. And is it possible at the end of this that the only people that end up winning are the dead?
Yeah, that's the old analogy, isn't it? The only one that wins at war are the dead. And it may come out being true, but, you know, the war is still being fought. So hopefully one side or the other, and hopefully the side that we're all generally rooting for, doesn't take so many casualties that they aren't able to enjoy their lives at the end of this quote unquote war. That's where it really comes into, because if you take too many casualties to be able to enjoy the spoils or even your life afterwards, then what was the point in going to war in the first place?
I mean, Ryan, is this turning out to be more and more of a senseless war just because they can't share the sandbox? I mean, there's unlimited amount of resources out there because people have died and left it all laying, yet they're not able to maintain even just a fragile piece. And every person they lose, the walkers or the dead army gets stronger. It's very much like Game of Thrones in that aspect, no?
Yeah, it is. It does seem senseless. Like it really doesn't. It's one of those things you almost, if you ask them, so why are you guys at war? It's really hard to pinpoint why, you know, it's gotten this way, but it really doesn't make any sense. You know, I think that from either side, it really, you know, they're better off with some kind of a, you know, truce, and you know, you stay on your side and I stay on mine. But I think, you know, from the very beginning of their kind of war with each other, they both made moves that I think the other side sees as, you know, you can't, there's no coming back from it. There's no, you know, you must die, you know. And I think, unfortunately, it's a situation where even though the best bet would be to kind of form some kind of a truce and, you know, they each live on their own sides of the, you know, live on their own sides, like, it's not going to happen. Egos are too big and lots of people are going to die. And yeah, the army of the dead will get stronger.
Should they lay down their crossbows and catcher's gear and barbed wire bats and just get along at this point?
I think at some point that might have been possible, but the thing here is that it's Negan and his unwillingness to give anything back that causes this to have to go to war. So while I agree that, you know, war isn't always the answer, you know, when you have somebody like Negan who is purely there to take, right? They aren't growing much of their own stuff. They aren't harvesting many of their own things. They send out teams to take from other places that are doing these things. So that's how they survive. And now if you had anything to give back, resources of any kind, including people, that would be fine because then it's a trade situation. But when you're just taking and taking and taking, at some point you're going to have the straw that breaks the camel's back and it's over. And Negan is still unwilling to give anything back. And he thinks that if he just shows up with Lucille and 27 guys, that we can just overpower everybody. And that had been true. It's no longer true. That's the problem. So now it's a real war, but they still have some advantages. They've got advantages of they have more people. They have more firearms. They have resources in a war that are more valuable.
Someone in here, and I'm even looking at you two guys, made everything happen out there. Sometimes it doesn't need to be done with guns. Sometimes it can be done with words. Ryan, was Gavin right? I mean, was this just a case of convenient timing, or was this a perfectly planned attack to cut off the Saber's leadership within Sanctuary?
So if I'm looking at it from their perspective, I don't know, not much of it. I could see how I could say you'd be suspicious, but also I could see how it would happen without any help. So nothing about it, about the way things went down, made me feel like there had to be somebody on the inside helping. Obviously we know that that's the case. But then at the same, not Daryl was kind of hanging out outside when everything went down. So he'd be the first person I'd suspect in that case, which they didn't seem to really call him out on that. But it seemed like he was really pushing that hard, even though I didn't feel like really it could have just been perfectly timed.
See, I disagree. I think that there's no way that you get that precise without very, very good intel. The pure fact that all of the leadership was there when they move freely between different spots, collecting things with their teams, that they were all in the same place at the same time that easily, that alone says to me that there was a mole. Somebody was letting things know. I mean, and there's plenty of other things that you can lead to, but that's probably the biggest one. It was too precise. Somebody had to give that information away because they know the size of all these other communities. There's no way that you could coordinate the amount of things to know where everybody's at in the Sanctuary without having that intel coming from inside. So while I see what you're saying, Ryan, there's from an actual intelligence perspective, like military type thing, there's no way to pull this off without inside intel.
Well, and you're right in that aspect too, because we know that there's multiple layers of leadership within Sanctuary. You know, once Negan's out, there's a few other people that'll take care of things. We don't know that about the outposts. I mean, and so far, what we saw from Gavin's group was it looked like the second in charge was who? Jared, maybe? I mean, and you see how well thought out and strategic his planning is. He's like, I'll just randomly shoot the kid just because. We don't know how these outposts are run. So if you take Regina or you take Gavin or you take Simon out of them, we don't know what happens. And maybe the end result is Rick and his forces running in and just rolling over everybody. And there really is nobody there to call the plays. Dr. Eugene Holmes isn't going out like that. Not like Dr. Carson. And at the end of this, IG, somebody's going to need to be the scapegoat. So our good old friend Dwight has showed that he's willing to step over the innocent to save his own skin. But based off the conversation they had in Dwight's room between him and Eugene, do you think Dwight's plan is to throw Eugene to the wolves as soon as this is over?
You know, I don't know. I'm still kind of confused at that. I don't know if it's good to bring anyone your select batch of cukes, you know, because you're going to get out of this pickle. I don't know if that's the best way to go about it. I think, honestly, Eugene is seeing a point that he can get back out. And that's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping that this shows the window of opportunity for them to flip the Sanctuary back up on its head and screw them from the other side, right? Give it all away. Because I think that the combination between Eugene and Dwight, they can really undermine everything that's happening in there and still make it look like they're doing the right thing to keep themselves safe. And that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, Eugene is the master of watching his own back and saving his own skin. Ryan, is he just going to sit around and let Dwight kind of fence him in being the most likely suspect?
That's a really good question. What I'm kind of the fascinating thing for me is, you know, now that I think, you know, based on some stuff towards the end, I think Eugene's pretty certain that it is that Dwight's the mole or has something, you know, he's doing something nefarious. So I guess the question is, you know, how far gone is Eugene? Because I think, you know, at this stage, I think he's he's gone. So I almost expect him to give Dwight up. But
you're not going to hold out any hope? Come on. It's Eugene. We all love the haircut.
I got maybe 5%.
Come on, you got to live on that 5%, Ryan. So, you got to live on that 5%.
So I think that there's that 5% that maybe he sees, wait, there's someone on my side. Great. I'm going to, you know, I'll keep this to myself. And maybe we, you know, we can work our way out of this and help Rick. But the 95% of me thinks he's outing him at some point, or he will hold on to the information until it's convenient. But I just don't think anymore that Eugene sees this as an opportunity to help sabotage them from within. Even if he sees Dwight as an ally, I think Eugene's looking out for himself. And until he sees that jumping ship back or jumping back is in his best interest, I think he's staying put. And if it means selling out Dwight, he'll sell out Dwight if he has to.
This episode here may push him back towards Team Rick. I'll tell you, I'm his biggest supporter as far as Eugene, the character, and Josh, the actor, but they're doing a damn good job, especially this episode, to make me think that he actually is Negan. So I'm really interested to see where it goes. But like the band on the Titanic, I'm going down with the ship on this one. I'm still going to hold out hope to the very end until he pulls a gun out and shoots Carol, that he's playing this up, and he very well may have an ally in this in Dwight. However, I think if it comes down to the aha gotcha moment, he's throwing Dwight headlong into the same fire that poor Dr. Carson's went into. Back in the Peace, Love, and Understanding trailer, Father G is slowly breaking Negan down. But Ryan, if we get Negan's confession and his backstory, will that kill any chances of that origin episode that we've been crying for the last couple weeks?
I think they were just vague. He was just vague enough, because I was thinking that same thing. It's like, I want that origin episode. And he was just vague enough in his description of his background and what got him there that we, you know, we can get an origin episode and it still means something. I was a little concerned because I thought he gave up a little bit, but I think that there's still enough, like, what's the state that is, how sick was his wife? How did he work with kids? You know, what was he doing that was so bad to her? You know, I think there's a lot that could be gleaned from it. Like, was he this guy, you know, before the outbreak, or was he like a completely different person and he changed? Like, how close was he to the Negan that we know? So I definitely think that we'll get that episode, but I was a little concerned.
IG, Daryl wants to take the easy way out and use the dynamite they recovered from the crash truck against the Saviors to knock down the last wall and cause them hopefully to surrender by dinner time. Rick refuses and says that it could get them all to take up arms and fight against us. Where's your mindset here? I mean, are you Team Rick or Team Daryl? What perspective do you identify with the most? Take the road less traveled and use restraint, or blow a hole in the goddamn wall and let the walkers in?
While I understand what Daryl is trying to do, I don't really agree with it. I understand it. I don't agree with it. I think that Rick's plan and mindset in the long run is the one that's going to actually get you victory, because one of the things that you can do to gain victory over an opponent is turn the people against your opponent, turn their own people against them. And if you're showing the willingness to keep them alive, to not cause additional harm to them if you don't have to, that says a lot about the character of your side. So it's really important. And again, they've said it so many times in this episode that people are a resource. Well, that's a resource that's really hard to reproduce at this point, because there aren't a whole lot of babies coming around. Mostly because I think they've got way too many prophylactics and not enough food. So it just does not lend well to raising children. So it's good to keep those alive that you can. And if you're shown that you're just going to be remorseless and kill whoever gets in the way, whether they're armed, unarmed, children, old people, doesn't matter, then you're going to lose the will of the people. If you lose that, then it's a much harder fight, because even if you get the worker people over there to pick up arms against you, they may not be very good fighters, but you know, when they overwhelm you with numbers, that's really, really difficult.
Well, and here's my point of contention with this. You know, Rick doesn't want to kill the workers because we're going to need them at some point, you know, either to work with us or fight with us against the Saviors. We have Negan in the trailer yelling about people are a resource. So both leaders in this conflict are in agreement that people are needed to maintain and build, rebuild civilization, yet they're both entrenched in this war where they're just throwing people to slaughter every single time somebody picks up a gun. Did that make any sense to you, Ryan?
It makes sense in theory, but I did, you know, in this case, I think this was a dumb storyline. Like this is a discussion that they could have had before. I don't believe that they would come to blows over this so quickly. I think it was just that was one thing that knocked a little bit off the episode of like whatever my overall score would be, was just, I felt like that whole argument was not believable. But, you know, my issue is, you know, obviously I'm not a sociopath and I don't think they should just, you know, they should just kill everybody. But at the end of the day, like, you're dealing with what looks like a cult, and you know, how likely, I mean, if your own guy, Eugene, you know, could turn so easily and so suddenly, like, are they really going to sit and rely on the worker people? Like, what sense does that make? Like, they need to end this and end it swiftly. And if it means cutting off the leadership and killing, you know, a good deal of the worker people, you know, that's war. That's part of it. And it's unfortunate, but I just don't see how kind of handling this with kind of kid's gloves and, you know, hoping that people turn, you know, hoping that the people see that they made the decision not to kill them and then they turn against Negan, that's just going to draw this thing out longer. So it's like, fine, if you want to draw this out and kind of be at a stalemate for a long time, great. But you could, you know, literally blow a huge hole and really cause a lot of damage to the savior. So I think that, you know, as far as this argument is concerned, I'm on Daryl's side, especially if they want a short term, you know, they want a victory. You know, obviously there will be repercussions and things to deal with later, but I don't see how, you know, saving them now will create this kind of kumbaya moment where all the, you know, saviors will join over with Alexandria.
I'd like to point out that Ryan says that he's not the sociopath and he wants to kill everybody. He is obviously drinking that cult flavored Kool-Aid. So it's really good Kool-Aid. He's there with, he already doesn't have any belief in Eugene, wants to kill everybody. Come on, Ryan, you're supposed to be the voice of reason here. We're supposed to be the a-holes. You're the one. No, I get it. Kill them all.
I like doing this at night rather than during the morning, because after a long day of training and dealing with the people in New York City, Ryan's just ready to tear them all up. Now, exactly. We would have recorded this tomorrow morning, it would have been slightly different.
Yeah.
So, Ryan, instead of agreeing to disagree like we're all doing here, they decide to go straight UFC and throw down. And to a great callback to the third episode, Daryl chokes Rick like Shane did to him in the very first season. So we get a great line from Rick that says, "Chokeholds are illegal, asshole." Number one, Ryan, did it look like Rick was about to tap? And number two, the guns and ammo, dynamite, are now all destroyed. Was the kingdom's sacrifice last week all for nothing?
Yeah, is like that. Seriously, like, they just in one fell swoop made that whole episode and all those deaths and everything worth nothing, which kind of sucked. Like, when that happened, I was like, wow, they just... How many people died for that? So, yeah, and Shiva, so we lost all that for nothing. So that kind of bugged me a little bit. It was a fun line. The, you know, chokeholds are illegal. You know, I was just taken out of it because I didn't like the scene, because it was just kind of, it felt forced. I didn't feel like there was real tension between them, and for them to go to working, like, you know, for the last few episodes, working as a really great team to get themselves in and out of really tight situations, to fighting each other over that without any real discussion, just, you know, I get that Daryl's kind of traumatized, but it just didn't feel right to me. And then to just toss the just none of it made sense.
And that's why we can't have nice things. You know, if those two wouldn't have fought, we'd have been fine. But, you know, they have to have their little kid fight and everything. You know, I put on Twitter last night that they needed the this is our get along shirt, where you put them both in the same shirt and they have to stand there until they stop fighting. You know, if they wouldn't have fought, they'd have had all the guns, all the explosives, all that stuff. And this would have easily turned the tide the other way. But, you know, a blast damaged M2 is not going to do them any good. That's for sure. I wouldn't trust firing that thing ever again. That's one for sure thing. You don't go dig that out of the rubble and try and salvage it.
Yeah, in the short term, I mean, it's out of the Savior's hands, and they can no longer use it to fish a sanctuary out of this ocean of foul-smelling dead people out there. But at the same time, it really does hurt the cause. I mean, there was a lot on that truck other than those guns and that dynamite. And just because they wanted to have a push fight, which felt completely forced, you know, it's all for naught. And we basically lost a whole community for them to have some sort of silly argument and slap each other around. And then it's all over. It was a really bad move, and it was a low point for Rick's efforts. Gabe and Negan share their sins, and you're forgiven. And then right after that, a direct punch to the face. Thanks. IG, was that not both one of the most heartfelt but hilarious confessions of all time?
It was great. I loved the confession, and you could tell that it was honest, especially from Negan, because he's like, you made me tell you something that made me care. I had feelings, and now I must punch you in the face. That was just really good. It's like, you made me feel, so now I have to hurt you. But he didn't hurt him too bad. He just gave him a little bop, you know, because he didn't even fall down or crumple or nothing. He just head whipped back and he put his hand to his face like, ow, fucker, that hurt.
I feel like I took it as like, you just tried to shoot me, but we need to get out of this together. So here's a punch to the face. But like, I kind of took it more like he was punching him because like he tried to shoot him.
No, it was more because you made me feel. Okay. I'm pretty sure you made me feel things. And now I have to just punch you in the face because I don't let anybody see that side of me, because he really doesn't. The only affection he really shows most of the time is to Lucille, and it's really kind of innuendo only. You know, the vampire bat just does not take a lot of caressing. I liked it. I liked it a lot because it was such a genuine moment from both characters, and it worked very well.
I think his reaction was one of what anybody who shuts down their feelings and hides them deep and then somebody forces them into an emotional moment. That's what everybody wants to do. You know, that's you just want to give them a quick shot to the face for putting you in a situation that you didn't want to be in. You know, he had to feel, he had to admit weakness. So, you know, a quick little lash out, but not a full beating because he's going to need him to get out of here.
I don't even think that's why he did it. I don't think he didn't give him a full beating because he needed him to get out of there, because I think he'd have got out of there maybe even better had he kept him alive and just let the walkers start feasting, because then they're all distracted. I think he generally wanted to save him, because I think he's trying to convert as many of the people from other places as he can. If he can make some other people believe, maybe the rest of them will just come over or start doing what he asks willingly. I think Negan believes in himself so much that he thinks if he just shows some of the people the right way or what he's doing, that they'll just do whatever he asks.
Well, everybody has the opportunity to be Negan from the word go. There's a lot of common sense in his argument. If you don't look at the grand scheme of things, that sure, you're going to get all these things you need, but you're also going to be servitude. I mean, they have Gabriel called him out on it. I mean, the workers are essentially slaves. You want to call it, but I guess if we look at the real economy, right, Ryan? I mean, the workers are essentially slaves there too, even though they have free will to work and earn as much as they want. But most of them are just limited to due to how the system set up, right?
No, it's very true. It's like no different. The only difference is there aren't as many options as there are in, you know, in a world sans zombies. But yeah, it's true. It's like, you know, we I was listening to somebody talk about this recently. I forget what, but it was kind of that whole idea that, you know, yeah, we, you know, even here, you know, America, we're free, but what does that really mean? Like, because yeah, you do, you need to eat, you need money, so you're gonna have to work, so you have to be involved in this system. You can't just be, you're not really free to just do whatever you want, because you have to be involved in the economic system in order to survive. So right off the bat, like, you know, there really isn't the kind of, you know, there's there's ostensibly we have freedom, but like, you know, there's base things that we have to do. We have no choice. And just in this world, you know, their options are much smaller. So yeah, people can do whatever they want, but you know, really their options are pretty limited. So they're, you know, essentially, yeah, servitude or slaves or however you want to put it, you know, there's not much choice that they have.
IG, we make a quick stop by the Red Machete storyline, and it basically looks like the father might have stuck his hand directly or arm directly in the walker's mouth and got bit. Number one, why do you think they tied a walker to their porch? I mean, wouldn't a bird bath be slightly nicer to look at? Even in the zombie apocalypse, curb appeal is the most important thing. And two, maybe if you're going to do that, gag the thing till you have it secured.
You know, I don't think that they're looking at the resale value, right? Because, I mean, they just are not taking care of that property. I just don't get it. And yeah, why would you stick your hand in there? What is wrong with people? You know, and I see people do stupid things on a nearly daily basis. And I often say to myself, what is wrong with people? but not at this level. It is just crazy the amount of things that are wrong with what happened there.
We used the guts trick from episode 2 all the way up to now. I mean, Fear of the Walking Dead was on for 5 minutes and they're using the guts trick. But do you think Negan might have done a little bit of foreshadowing? Did he make a great point that nobody's gotten sick from this yet?
Yeah, he does make a good point. I mean, I just want to know the science of how all this works anyway. Like, how much of it, you know, is it just a bite? If you have an open wound and you put all that stuff over you, does that infect you? Like, I would love to know like a little bit more about how all this works. And yeah, like, how is it that nobody's gotten sick? You know, they're not even getting sick from just the dead being around, let alone like covering yourself in it. So, but you know, with that little bit of foreshadowing, we saw, you know, again, not to fast forward, we did see, you know, Gabriel in a weird state later on. So I guess, you know, I guess we'll find out if you can get sick from it.
Negan and Gabe make it back upstairs to make the save before things get out of hand with the workers. They're happy to see him. They send him back downstairs. Everything's right in the world. But as they start putting the pieces together, there was a moment where Eugene had red paint on his hands and there was red paint on the bag of the guns that the workers had. IG, when it comes right down to it, do you think Eugene's ratting Dwight out?
No, I don't think he will. I think it helps that he knows who's in this with him. Who is there and is showing strength but doesn't really want to be there? Because that's the role I think Eugene is playing, is it's self-preservation, showing like I'm going to be strong and show that I have worth so that I can continue to survive at a fairly comfortable level. But given the right opportunity, I want out of here. And knowing who the other players in that game are is a very strong position to be in. I think the problem is, you know, trying to let Dwight know that you're in the game with him is a precarious situation because you need to make sure that it's genuine and that he believes you. Because otherwise, Dwight could very easily just throw Eugene under the bus and be like, he did it. It was Eugene all along. I told you he wasn't to be trusted.
So they throw Father Gabriel in the Easy Street closet. Eugene goes to bring him some pillows and blankets and some things to sit on. And he turns up sick. Ryan, give me your prediction now. Is he playing possum? Is he actually sick? Did he get sick from the guts? Or do you think he was bit during their march to the stairs?
That's really good. You know, it's a good question. I don't think he's faking it because I haven't seen enough from Gabriel to make me think that, you know, he would go that far with it. I would see him try something else, maybe try to talk to Eugene or try to reason with Negan or do something. But I don't see him faking being sick or being that good at it. He seemed like he was in a bad place. So I think he's sick. I don't think he was bitten, but I think he's not doing well. We had that bit of foreshadowing from Negan. So, you know, I'm going to say I think he's sick. I don't think he's bit. I don't think he's faking it. But maybe he's being a little opportunistic and wants to take a little bit advantage of that. But yeah, I think Gabriel is going to be okay for the short term.
Living up to his name of Helicopter Boy in a world of empty skies, somehow Rick Grimes always sees a helicopter no matter where he goes. IG, your thoughts on the episode, the helicopter, why Rick might be headed to the dump, and your rating?
Well, I liked the episode. I really did. This is probably one of the strongest episodes this season so far. I mean, of top 10 episodes across all of Walking Dead, it's not going to crack that. But this is still a very good episode. We get a little more in-depth feeling on Negan. That helps me a lot, right? That gives me more reason to cheer for the bad guy. And I like to be able to cheer for the bad guy a little bit. I don't want him to win, but I want him to compete. And I mean, it's kind of like watching the New England Patriots. Almost nobody will admit to wanting them to win, but somehow they still have a stadium full of fans. That being said, the helicopter, holy shit. I mean, if you know anything about aviation, which most people don't, it takes an insane amount of hours to maintain a helicopter. It's like 10 hours for every 1 hour of flight. It's crazy what it takes. So if they've got an operating helicopter out here, they've got some people that have got their shit together. I don't know who that is. I want to find out. Why would he go back to the Heapsters? Well, I don't know as the Heapsters are getting their fair play of this deal. I think that the Saviors are a bunch of takers, as they always have been. And Negan is very Vader-like in, I've altered the deal, pray I don't alter it any further. And I think that that might be the opportunity to restrike a new deal that is beneficial for both the Heapsters and our faithful heroes. I don't know that speculation. We'll have to see when the next episode goes. The helicopter puts a whole new spin on everything because it looked kind of like an attack helicopter. So there might be more big machine guns at play. This episode was pretty strong for me. I'm going to give it an 8.5. I really did enjoy it. Good acting all around, but it was very small. I mean, I could have gone higher. The Rick and Daryl fight scene, that dropped a half a point for me right off the top. It could have, it just did not seem like something that would happen between those two at this point. I think they've been through too much very recently to have it go that way. I mean, even this is moments from last week when they're chasing down guys and rolling down hills and don't even scuff their pants. They aren't going to get into a fight that quickly. It just does not work. There's a lot of things to be said. We're moving. We're moving, ladies and gentlemen, and I can't wait to see where it goes. The helicopter has me intrigued. I want to see where that came from.
So I will push back slightly on the thing with the helicopter. I totally believe and get that it would take that much time to maintain a helicopter, but this is TV, so can rest assured that it'll probably be operated by somebody with no helicopter experience and learn from a manual, because that's how TV works. It's interesting. It kind of makes that scene at the end of last season. It seemed, at least unless they retconned it, seems like they didn't screw up, and whatever was flying in the air was maybe this helicopter. I guess it definitely adds some intrigue, like who's got the helicopter. I doubt it's the Saviors. I doubt it's the Heapsters. So where's that coming from? Is that going to be a threat now? Is it just a little teaser for something that's to come? So that was definitely interesting. And then if they have a helicopter, what are they doing? Why are they there? Why haven't they seen the helicopter before? Like, all these questions come up. So although I have a feeling like none of that will be, either it'll be answered next week and it'll be anticlimactic, or we won't see or hear from the helicopter for a year, which is fine. Like, I think we got enough going on now that, we could be intrigued and deal with that later. I don't know why Rick's going to the Heapsters right now. It doesn't really make any sense. They've got this whole plan. They've been enacting this plan. Granted, the guy was in dire straits, but how do they know that he wasn't lying about the kingdom being decimated? So to just take him at his word without, maybe reconnecting with his people and doubling back, figuring out what's going on, where are we, kind of do a status check and then, make plans from there. It just seemed brazen and weird for him to just say, I'm going to go find the Heapsters now and try to talk them after betraying us once, try to talk them into joining our sides. It's just, that plan doesn't make any sense. Overall, the episode, I really did like the episode. I definitely, the tension between Rick and Daryl knocks it down for me. Honestly, their story, they shouldn't have been in the episode at all. The stuff between Negan and Gabriel was really, really great. It was great to see more of a human side of Negan, while him still maintaining that kind of the character that he has. Like, we didn't have to become a weak, sad character for him to be a little bit more human and for us to understand what's going on in his head and to see things from the Saviors' perspective. If you sit back, you really think they're not wrong. We may not love the way they go about things, but in this world, the way it is, like, he's doing what he has to do and what he thinks is right in order to maintain the society the way it is. So then it just becomes their way versus Rick's way, and that gives us a choice of, who we think is right. But, I think this is a necessary episode, and I'm going to, I'm trying not to grade based on how I think the season's going, because I've mentioned that I think it's just been all over the place as far as what they choose to tell us and when. But I think as an episode, I'll give it a 7-8. Again, I was knocked it down a little bit with the Daryl and Rick stuff, but I'll give it an 8, a solid 8. I really did enjoy it. I really thought it was one of the stronger, this and last week were the two strongest episodes of the season easily to me. So I did enjoy it, and I'll give it an 8.
Rick Grimes seems more helicopters than Henry Hill in Goodfellas. But the last time he saw a helicopter, I think it took a good 3 seasons before it got resolved where it came from or where it was going or who it was. So let's hope that they don't take that long to resolve it. I'm getting the feeling that this helicopter is somehow going to come into play with the Saviors breaking free from their current predicament. At some point, they have to get out of that little area because the war has got to continue, and it looks like the forces on the outside are all but decimated. We're going to have to figure that out somehow. We're, Dr. Smarty Pants is going to have to get his thinking cap on and figure out how Negan and the boys can get outside the sanctuary. I think the whole headed to Jadis is a really bad idea. These people, you encounter them, you make a deal with them, you risk your lives to get guns for them, and the first thing they do is they turn their back on you for a better deal and shoot you in the side. So I can't see how going to make a second deal with them, no matter how much you plead, threaten, beg, borrow, steal, high five, they're not going to jump to your team. They've already made their decision. It makes no sense to me. I really enjoyed the Negan stuff in this episode. There was a lot of background information, a lot of filling in the gaps between the episodes of what led up to the sanctuary attack. And I'm going to steal this line because it was I'll borrow it because it was brilliant. But it looks as if Gabriel started the secondary character dance, giving him a few shining moments just before we say goodbye to him. So things don't look great for the Alexandrian clergyman. Negan and Rick's leadership is starting to be questioned, and it looks like they might be losing control a little bit, and that brings up a lot of questions of where the storyline is going to go. I love even though I hated the fight, I love the chokehold callback, and I'll give the episode an 8.
And that's going to do it for this episode of The Walking Dead Underground. We just brought you our review and our recap of The Big Scary You, episode 5 of season 8. It was a great time going over this for you. We hope you enjoy the show. We're going to be here every week bringing you every fresh episode of The Walking Dead and a whole bunch of other new surprises. We got a lot coming for you. We want you to come back. I'm Igrahi. With me have been my co-hosts, Cynic and Ryan. Send us your comments and questions to cynicradio@gmail.com. That's cynicradio@gmail.com. You can also find us on the internet at cynicradio.com. Look for us on Facebook at facebook.com/cynicradio, or you can join the Walking Dead Underground fan site. More than 20,000 Walking Dead fans. You can be one of them. Also, you can find us on Twitter at cynicradio. And you can find us on Instagram at Cynic Radio. We're thankful for every last listen we get. We love every single one of you. And until next time, don't get captured.
Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and at thewalkingdeadunderground.com. Join us in our fight against the Saviors.
Hey, Ryan, just one more time, just for posterity, say helicopter again.
Helicopter.